Hello and welcome to the Worcester Observer podcast. We're going to do something a little bit different this week. We're going to actually talk about ourselves a little bit because it is Journalism Matters Campaign Week, which is a chance for local journalists and local newspapers across the UK to talk to you about the value of local newspapers in a democracy. I'm your host, Rob George, editor of the Worcester Observer and more of an observer, I guess. And joining me is Claire, who is fresh from the stage at the News Media Association talk event.
I was down in London yesterday talking to all the big bosses of all the newspapers across the country. And it was an amazing experience. I was very nervous. I had to give a speech about us doing all podcasts and how we're doing and where we see the future and everything. But it went really well, really well received. They're all listening to our podcast, by the way, Rob.
It's fantastic. Well, we're breaking...
I was very proud.
We're breaking records all over the place. We're going to soon be rivaling Sky and everyone else. But Journalism Matters, I won't give you too much of the blurb, but it is set up by the News Media Association, which looks after us and promotes us and says, you know, what a good job local... I don't know why I'm doing hand gestures again. We're not filming it anymore. But it looks after us and promotes local journalism and the role of the local newspaper in a democracy, in a local society. I'm sure you've seen it. I know, I won't give them a name check, but I know the other newspaper in Worcester have done a very good editorial about the value of local newspapers. And I think if I just start with me personally, is that I believe in a local newspaper. I believe that we need local newspapers, but we shouldn't be fools to say that the paper is going to have a long-term future because we don't know what's going to happen with the digitisation. I was thinking of that driving in. Is that even a word?
That sounds good enough word to me.
Digitisation, it sounds like blue sky thinking.
Digitalisation, maybe.
Digitalisation, that's the one.
It's early. It's still early in the morning here.
It is still early. I was at Worcester City Council last night eating... I have ate so well, thanks to Evesham Town Council and Worcester City Council the last two nights. I cannot thank them enough for the delightful buffet that was on offer.
Look at you and all the perks you get being the editor of the local paper.
Yeah, but
there you go.
Eating at 9 o'clock at night is probably... <they'll> probably
not good for your figure.
Not some physicians that would actually say, well, I've given up caring about my figure a long time ago. But from me standpoint, I think it's an important chance to raise awareness of local newspapers like ourselves and others, because we do live in a changing landscape. I don't want this to come across as, oh dear, the dinosaurs go into the trenches to protect the local newspaper again. We do live in a changing landscape, and only fools will believe that the Observer will carry on in just paper form. The future is digital. The Observer through your door is accompanied by a successful website, with social media, with Instagram, which I've still got to learn about. Everyone said, oh, you could tag me on Instagram. I'm like, I don't know what that means.
It's where all the cool kids are, Rob.
Oh, that's you
need to be a cool kid to use Instagram.
And of course, this podcast. And our responsibility, but in this changing world, our responsibility to you, our readers, doesn't change. We need to bring you the facts, because there are people out there that want to push what they call alternative facts on you, their version of the world. And local newspapers, and I'm being very, very arrogant in speaking for the whole industry, but I hope other editors and reporters would agree with me. It's our responsibility to bring you the facts, to bring you both sides of the argument. And if we do come down on one side, can clearly say what a person was not telling the truth, we will do. But it's important you get all sides of the argument, because we're here to inform you. We're here to stand up for you and the community that we are a part of, because I don't think we have success if we're not part of the community.
Well, this was the whole conversation. You should have been there yesterday. This was the whole conversation of yesterday's big meeting down in London. I had to do a speech, obviously, and my whole point in the speech was obviously talking about the future of the newspaper and going into things like podcasts and more online, etc. But I definitely believe that, and everyone there believes, that the future of newspapers we need to almost be gatekeepers for news, because we are trained and there's so much fake news and unchecked rumour pervading social media and unregulated websites nowadays too. It's more important than ever that our communities have voices that they can trust. And we all know that regional press is the most trusted source of news. I kept saying yesterday, without us, local important stories aren't told, council meetings go uncovered, and communities are left without a voice. And if you think about it, news, everything starts locally.
Yeah.
There's, you know, there isn't like a national, even the national news, the BBC, they all get, it all gets fed up from people like us out there on the ground doing the groundwork.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's more important than ever. if we just disappear, it's going to be a shame for the whole world. The whole world needs us to be the gatekeepers of news. And it's just how we're going to do it, because we are up against massive challenges. Obviously, there's Facebook and Google, and we've lost so much advertising revenue to, you know, our cars, our jobs, our motors, yeah. People who used to advertise in our papers are now just doing it online. And it's where we go from here, really.
I agree entirely. And that's why I do want to stress, and I go, we'll bore you to death, I'm afraid, on the podcast. You know, this isn't about protecting the paper that comes through your door. We're not doing that. But we're saying that we're changing. When I first took the job, well, when I first started, websites were very much in their infancy. Now, as editor of a local newspaper, I feel I'm the editor of the paper, I'm the editor of the website, but I'm the editor of our social media as well. And if you'd have said to me about 14, 15 years ago, you would have to edit the social media. I mean, it's great because you put a story up there. I mean, I'll give you an example. In Evesham on Monday, two cars left the A46 and crashed down an embankment. We were the first to report it. And it's shared. You put it on social media. People can just press share and tell their friends and tell their friends and tell friends. Something we haven't got in a paper, because someone's got to read the paper and then they may only share the story the next week when they go, oh, did you read that in the Observer? We live in an instant world where people will no longer wait till Wednesday for their news. If they see something happening on Copenhagen Street or on the High Street on Monday morning at 11:01, they pretty much want to know about it by about 11:10.
Absolutely. Like,
for example, we had the Pizza Express incident in Worcester yesterday where a van crashed through the window of Pizza Express.
Oh no, where was that?
On Pizza Express in Cathedral Plaza.
Oh my goodness, no one was hurt?
I think the driver was taken to hospital. We don't know any more at this stage as we record this on Wednesday. But again, this is something that's happened.
Mm.
In the olden days, I'm going back to probably the late 90s, you wouldn't find out about that until the paper came out.
Absolutely. Well, you guys do work 7 days a week now, don't you? Your phones are constantly on. You're constantly checking your Facebook messages and the stories and uploading them. I see it. I mean, because, you know, Sunday when I'm relaxing, I'm seeing all your posts going up on the website. It's a 7-day job being a local journalist.
It is. But we are increasingly, as a nation, 7-day nation as well. One of the biggest stories of last year, look at me, speaking of, I've got some sort of posh vibe this morning. I don't know why. One of the biggest stories towards the tail end of last year was actually something the West Mercia police put out at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night. There'd been an incident where two gentlemen had been stabbed. They put a release out with all the details, investigation, etc., etc. I used my phone, wrote the story from the release, put it up on our website. Between, I think, 9 o'clock and midnight, I think we brought 10,000 people into the website.
Amazing.
I think there's the 7-day cycle of news. People don't go to weekends and go, I don't want the news.
Mm.
There's this instant thing with, and all your devices are hooked up, you follow us on social media, you'll see it, as Claire said, you know, it always pops up. So I think we're in a breaking news culture now where people need to know the news the moment it happened.
But what do you think we can do? Because obviously Google and Facebook are benefiting massively from our stories and we're not getting the benefits from it. They are having the main hits. Obviously we get a trickle down and we can say we've got this many viewers and things, but they're getting the benefits. They're having people advertising on their platforms and not us. How do you think we can come up against them?
The problem is I've not got an advertising brain. You know, I'm paid by your family to edit the newspapers, and I can strategize. And I said to you before we came on, I think we have reaped some benefit because the instantaneous nature, for example, that Evesham story, we put it on, people share it straight away. We do reap a benefit, but I agree with you entirely. We're not reaping the financial benefit. But then you get into the whole regulation of the internet. How should the internet work with the press? How should social media companies, which are without losing free speech, you know, how far do you go? Do they launch a tie-up with one newspaper? Like, do Facebook only deal with beloved media to the exclusion of others?
Hmm.
And that's the problem. I mean,
we are treading on new ground, aren't we?
It's a future. I think I went to a lecture many years ago now where the former editor of a newspaper in the West Midlands said, the way you treat news has changed, because if there's an accident on the A46, people want to hear about it within an hour. If anyone sadly passed away or was tragically ill, and they'll read about it in the paper. But you must tell them the first thing before you can even get to the second thing for a successful operation.
Absolutely.
And I agree with them entirely. I mean, I'm very lucky. For 15 years in November, I've worked for Beloved Media. I've worked for Pat and Chris, Claire's mum and dad, who have been champions of the local media. I mean, for the listeners that don't know, I mean, your family's links through to local journalism go back a long, long way, don't they?
Yeah, my parents actually set up the first ever free daily newspaper, The Daily News, back in October 1984, I think that was, in Birmingham. And they've actually launched over 70 newspapers altogether. They've obviously now only got our small group, which is 15 titles in Worcestershire, Warwickshire, Coventry in the West Midlands. But, yeah, I mean, I've grown up on the newspaper floor. It's so important for me, and I am a passionate about local news and keeping it alive, because I do, as I said before, it's just so important for our communities and our democracy. We can't be having governments issuing the news that you see in other countries in the world. It's part of, because as I so respect you guys, you have such a hard job, and I said it I think a couple of weeks ago in the podcast, you're so impartial, you're so fair, you must sometimes want to write and, you know, really put your point of view, but you're always you're so fair, and that's what the public need. They need people like you to be the gatekeepers for their news, because if we leave it to our governments, or if we leave it to organisations that are just all about money, it's not going to be fair, impartial news, is it?
It isn't. And one of the things I hope, certainly your parents don't mind me saying this, one of the things that I benefit from as an editor is that there is no proprietorial influence. There never has been, and I can confidently say there never will be. We're allowed to get on with our jobs. We're allowed to actually go anywhere we want. And I think that's important. And the one thing I would say to you from local news and national news as well is that despite the industry, despite the struggles we've got, there has never been such a plurality for how you get your news. You can read sites like the Huffington Post, and you can dispense with local newspapers and national newspapers. I obviously hope you don't do that. But you could also... But I've always said, read widely. Try and go across the spectrum. But
this was raised yesterday at the meeting as well. Like, young people don't seem to read widely. They literally read a few headlines on Facebook or Google or wherever they get their news from online. And it's normally very one-sided sometimes. They don't have a broad range of news, do they, anymore?
No.
And this is one way why I'm very passionate about podcasts and doing more online, is because I think young people do love podcasts. I mean, it's the growing medium now for young people.
Absolutely.
6 million across the country are now regularly listening to podcasts, and that figure is growing over and over again. But one point that really struck me yesterday as well is they were talking about how people live within a five mile radius of their home. Not just live, but that's where they go out to clubs and bars and restaurants, and that's where they go to the gym, and that's where their kids go to school. And people are still very interested in their local vicinity. They want to know if new houses are being built down the road, or they want to know if their favourite restaurant's closing down, or a celebrity's in town. And just imagine, guys, if you're listening to this and you just had no way of finding that out unless it was on a website that you couldn't trust.
Yeah.
Or just coming up on Facebook as rumour and people. We've all seen it, haven't we? With people.
Absolutely. I mean, the point about you make about gatekeepers is so important, because anybody can be a journalist, and I believe anybody can and anybody should, because it's a rewarding profession. It's hard at times, it is, and especially now, it is hard work. I mean, when I tell people I'm the editor and the sole reporter on two titles, people go, well, you must be working hard. But yeah, but if you love it, I mean, we check the facts. So if we hear an celebrity is coming to Worcester, we will check it out, and we will only publish it if we know.
And we report correctly on quotes they say, exactly. Or we don't make things up. It's important to us, isn't it?
Yeah, but we will check it, and we will check it and say we can confirm an celebrity is coming to Worcester, whereas anyone could just go, oh, I've heard so-and-so's coming to Worcester. Mm. Whereas we're actually going out there and checking.
Absolutely. I spoke about you yesterday, actually, Rob.
Oh, dear.
I was talking about how...
I thought my ears were burning.
No, when you went out and you got that interview with Jeremy Corbyn when he came to Worcester, and that night it went up online, yeah. And that's the way it is going as well, isn't it, journalism? You know, where we, our readers and our listeners and our viewers on social media, etc., can see and hear from the horse's mouth reports of...
Exactly. I mean, off air, Claire knows how much I love podcasts. I've added another podcast to my phone recently, so I've now got six to go through on a weekly basis. But I really have got on board. We've got mobile recording gizmos now. And when the Labour Party told us Jeremy Corbyn was coming, I thought, well, it's an ideal chance. And yes, it was 7 or 8 minutes. But it was 7 or 8 minutes of something that... Because he came on a Thursday.
It was a fantastic interview, I have to say. I'm not a big fan of Jeremy Corbyn, but I really loved the way you interviewed him, and I thought he gave you very solid answers and answered a lot of questions that, and I'd been following the campaign, yeah. You know, religiously, but you got answers that hadn't been out there. Honestly, you were brilliant in that interview, and it must have been pretty nerve-wracking in the...
No, not anymore.
No.
It's, you know, I've always said to young reporters that I had under me, people like that need you more than you need them, because they want to get their message across. But it goes back to what I was saying about the instant nature. He came on a Thursday. Had I waited until the following week, the earliest I would have got an interview on the website in text form would have been probably Friday. And if we'd done anything in the paper, it was the following Wednesday. Whereas we do a podcast, we can record it. And as Claire said, we can put it out that night. You can hear Jeremy Corbyn's thoughts on Worcester, on being... in the campaign, and that's the beauty of it, and that's why I think local news matters. And one thing that came to my mind driving back from Worcester last night, very late, very, very late, but the sun was still up, so it was, well, it was still light, but it's not going dark till nearly 10 o'clock now, which is great.
It's
I
lovely.
Love the summer. I can't wait till it goes light, daylight until about 10:30. That's lovely, that is. Go and sit in my garden, read a book, lovely. But I was driving back last night, and one thing came to my mind. And it's a really, really, really tragic tale that still gets me now. And that's the case of Tom Jones, the Worcester student who was sadly found in the River Severn. The harmonisation of everything, newspapers, the community and social media that came together there, albeit for an ultimately tragic end, showed me the value of both us and social media going forward, because... from just a missing persons report on the Thursday morning, and I'll be honest with you, I'll level with you, we get missing person reports all the time from the police. Within 24 hours, usually they're found. They've gone off, they've had an argument with a girlfriend, a boyfriend or a family member, they've gone off, there's been panic and they've come back. So half the time you do write it and think, well, they'll be found, but you're doing the service, you're actually reporting and saying, right, the police are concerned. Have you as a community seen them? And we did the same for Tom. Clearly, after a while, he wasn't turning up, which provoked, and we did a podcast actually campaigning and actually saying, if anyone knows where he is, do get in touch. But then we had the rather dark moment of people being arrested. And then the story begins to get traction, and then you think, this is not a missing persons inquiry anymore. And I've been doing it 15 years in November. The feeling in the pit of your stomach when you see that and you think, this is going to go darker. It still gets you. It still may.
You taught me a lot, actually, because obviously I get all the Facebook messages from all of our newspapers coming onto my laptop and my mobile phone as well. And I remember then we had so many, didn't we? We even had members of our own staff saying, please post this. Look, this has been this. And you said, Claire, stop. Do not post anything until we've checked the facts. I will put up a report. And you did. You dealt with it brilliantly, because we had people saying, oh, Worcester Spotted said this, and this people said this, and the police have said this. And a lot of it was rubbish information, wasn't it?
It was.
So that is another way, and such a good example of how you can trust what your local newspaper
says.
Exactly,
but we should never quell hope. I think it's important to say some of the things we were getting in were people that genuinely had seen the picture and gone, that's him, I've seen him. Because people, you will see, if somebody shows you an image often enough, you will think you've seen the person.
Mm.
And as I said, it came to an awful, awfully tragic end, and is one of the darkest moments of last year for me, because you want every story to have a happy ending. I know the biggest thing thrown at me when I tell people I'm a journalist, oh, you only want bad news. But unfortunately, only really bad news will capture people's attention sometimes. If good news will, but bad news will, because it's new, because it's fresher. But after that, after he was found, you know, the vigil that was held, the pictures that we carried, the powerful images of candles, and there must have been thousands of people by the riverside that night for the vigil.
Do we know to this day what happened? He just fell in the river after a night out. We don't know if...
The inquest earlier this year, they saw him walking down. He goes over the bank. If you know Hilton Road in Worcester, you know that there's a bank that goes up and then it goes down to the river. He goes up and over the bank and he's never seen again.
Mm.
But how he comes to be in the water, the coroner recorded... I will not say what he recorded because I'm unsure of the facts, so I wouldn't want to say the wrong verdict because it was
there. You go again.
But the coroner said there was a scream heard on the CCTV, a scream for help.
Oh.
And there was two working theories that Tom went to answer: the scream for help, and ended up in the water somehow, or simply that he went to pass water,
and slipped
because it can be. Slip it there. We don't know. But the harmonisation of things, I mean, the Find Jonah Facebook page was just a source of information for us as well. We were able to keep in contact and see what was being put out and help in any way.
And
like,
pick out the facts, speak to the authorities and report the correct information.
When they were putting out saying, because they were actually very proactive in saying, we know you do want to search for him, but it's a police search. Don't get in the police's way. And we were able to convey that through the pages. And that's what we do. We are promoters. We are advertisers. We do advertise the community and we promote the community. We stand up for the community.
And we love helping our local businesses too.
We do.
We love it when new businesses come to town. We're all for promoting you and getting you on board and getting your customers to know about what you're offering. Because it's important for us that they survive as well. Our high streets are suffering. So.
The news of HMV, you know, are going to close. That's a massive loss to the city itself. But I just wanted to touch on that Tom Jones thing because I think that just showed you modern journalism for me, because it's not just about us. It's about people on Facebook setting up a Facebook page. I mean, we're regularly contacting. If you want to do so, it's facebook.com. Search for Worcester Observer and send us a message and we will get back to you. For the Paddle for Jack, Steve Bowes story that we covered a couple of weeks ago, that's a message from Steve on Facebook saying, I'm doing this.
You do so much good for the communities. I tell you what story I loved recently was the little boy in the stem cell search.
That
we were very instrumental in finding, getting all those donors to go in and be tested to see if they would be a match. That brightened my day the minute
I think I'd share the glory there. I think both us and the other newspaper in Worcester seized upon it. I know we both did it on our front pages. I know I had the story before the other newspaper and I held off waiting for the charity when I should have realised and just gone with my gut, because I mean, I've been here 15 years, I still make mistakes. You ask Matthew and James, our sub-editors, I still make mistakes. And one of them was not to go with my gut and just think, I'm going to go with it. I waited, and the other newspaper did a wonderful job, and they did. And so we joined it, and we joined the campaign. But that was probably, if there's a downside, that was the upside. If the Tom Jones thing was a very, very monumental low, that was a monumental high, because I didn't expect it to take off, because you do stories and you think, oh, well, that's just going to interest people in Worcester. I mean, this exploded, this Oscar Saxelby Lee story. It exploded at a time where Brexit was dominating the news, at a time where there were other things going on, yet this seemed to fly into the national newspapers, and there were people coming from everywhere to the donor sessions. And as I understand, Oscar is going through chemotherapy. He's going for his transplant very soon, so we wish him all the very best. But again, that's a Just Giving page. His mum and dad setting up a Just Giving page, telling their story in the way they want their story told. Because that, I think, for me, is where local journalism sits as well. Your national journalists, they don't have a connection.
And they're not on the ground, are they?
They're not on the ground, where we are. And I pride myself on making sure that if it's a sensitive story, that the family are comfortable with it. Talking to Steve, I'm not going to betray certain things of his confidence, but in the Paddle for Jack story, there's certain things that you'll see that aren't in that story. Certain details. I won't say any more than that, but it's to protect parts of the story that Steve doesn't want to tell, because it is about a charity challenge at the end of the day. It doesn't need to be about too much, and it is about the death of his little boy.
Mm. Do you ever have stories that you know if you break them, it's just the wrong thing to do? Like, do you have stories that you can't tell?
No, I don't think there is, because I think if there's a day you censor a story, I think that's the day you pack up and go home.
Right, okay.
There are difficult stories, and there are stories that you can't end up telling because of a multitude of factors. I'm very slowly talking here because my brain is vetting the words that I need to come out, but there was a story many years ago now. I won't say anything where it was, but there was a story of a sexual assault in the home, and we couldn't do it because at any sexual offence, the victims are guaranteed anonymity for life, and rightly so, because I think that is the most important part of that law. Because if you have been the victim of it, you shouldn't have your name plastered. And I agree with that 150%. But there was a story that we had and we could never bring to print because simply nothing made sense. Because we couldn't name, because it was involving a family and it was involving members of the family, we couldn't name the accused who was found guilty, because obviously naming him in an allegation of what it was would then implicate the victims of that.
Right.
So there are stories legally you can never bring to air, but you've got the story, it's just whether you can bring it out.
So you must almost have to be detective sometimes, thinking this is just...
Any young journalist, I think, coming through, it isn't shorthand, it isn't knowing who your local councillor is, it isn't even being a good... It isn't being a good person to go into the community and go, hello, how are you, and be really communicative. The most important thing is your law, because you need to know the law inside out, backwards, forwards, left, right, because that will cost you your job, that will cost your employers money, and that will cost you your credibility. But if you know how to challenge the law, because there are people that will... And I've been in court where a defendant's gone, well, I don't want my name in the press. And the judge has initially agreed to it. And journalists like myself have made representations and say, ah, under this law, he's got no right to do that. And we can overturn things. But I think I would never ever censor a story. And I think if you get told never to do a story, or you back away from a story, that's the time I think you go home. Because nobody's beyond reproach.
Sure.
Certainly Alan Amos is a very good contact of mine. He's a city and county councillor. But he has said, some very controversial things, and we've reported it, and I've made editors' comments chastising him for his views. Hmm. But we have very good contacts. But there's a difference between holding to people account and going, oh, he's a good contact, I'll leave it. The new mayor of Worcester, for example, who was elected last night, Al Adita, and congratulations to him and his family. And we've got another Muslim mayor of Worcester following on from Jabarías, who did a sensational job, I must say, as mayor. One of the things that came out and I didn't report on enough during the year, he had a consult for a day scheme, so where youngsters with learning difficulties, with disabilities, were able to accompany him to events as his consort.
Oh, that's a nice thing to do.
I think that's a terrific idea, and he will be sorely missed as mayor. But we've got another Muslim mayor, which shows the tolerant city that we are. And also the deputy mayor next year, is Joe Hodges, the Labour councillor. So we'll have a woman mayor, all being well. I think she's up for election next year. So if she wins election, she'll be a mayor next year. So we'll have a woman mayor. We've got our first Muslim woman on the council as well. So one of the things that came through last night was how tolerant Worcester is. And that's what makes me proud, because those from outside can come in and preach hatred on the streets. Worcester turns around 9 times out of 10 and goes, no, no. But the former, going back to about censoring stories, the former mayor of Worcester was accused of, well, he was recorded threatening to dig somebody up from a grave, because he does do a lot at the Muslim cemetery.
Hmm.
It was a row over fees and a row in the community, and he was recorded saying, I'll dig him up, which on the surface was disgraceful. Mm. And it is disgraceful. I didn't shy away from the story. It was a good contact for our paper when we were the Standard, and still now. And I phoned him up and said, I've got to put this, you can say no comment, I'm still running the story anyway because we've got enough. But he gave a comment and admitted, I've got a temper, I'm ashamed of it, I've got a temper and I do speak out, and I'm sorry. That's what I mean, you don't shy away from a story, because you never know. The accused and the person accused in the story may well phone you up or may well actually say to you, yeah, completely bang to rights.
Mm.
I know we had a case.
That's refreshing.
I know we had a case in Droitwich before the elections where one of the chaps going for election and was actually elected. I think he was elected, was he? Or it may not have been elected. But he made a number of very homophobic comments on social media years before he was even a councillor. Again, you phone him up. He's good contact, so you don't want to lose him. But you phone him up and you say, I've got to put these allegations to you. Straight up he went, it was a number of years ago, I wasn't as educated, because he's an older gentleman.
Mm.
I wasn't as educated as I am now. I'm profusely sorry for what I've wrote, because I did not realise the offence I would cause. And I think that's why we don't back away.
Mm.
Because you always do it, because you always put two sides of the story. It's not about protecting anybody. It's about saying, yes, that person's done that. Here's their response. But make up your own mind. I believe my readers are very, very intelligent. I don't believe I could ever lead my readers to a conclusion. That's why I've always put both sides of the story. You say I'm fair and balanced and you praise me and I start blushing again. But I think Worcester people are very fair, very balanced. I think if you put both sides, they'll form their opinion. It might not be your opinion. I mean, everyone knows, listen to the podcast, I've stated I'm a Remain supporter, but I'll carry letters supporting Brexit. I will find the middle ground, but I will carry people's views on Brexit. I've put Robin Walker, our MP, has constantly said we need to drive the legislation through to ensure Britain leaves the EU. That is the important thing. And especially in this current climate, I think local newspapers have never had a more important role, because we're so divided now.
Mm.
And I think our future as a media, I think, is to bring people together.
And how do you think we're going to get those young readers, those young listeners, those young viewers?
I think there'll be a eureka moment. There'll be a moment where our industry will go, that's it. But young people's tastes are very different.
Mm.
You've got people that are pushed away from the news because it's very, very middle-aged people going, and they're not talking to young people. I'd like to see from the top up, I would like to see politicians engage with youth first and foremost, because they're the voters of the future. And
absolutely.
I think too much of our politics now, it's in a very staid House of Commons. I don't know many teenagers that'll go, oh, I've recorded BBC Parliament because it's Prime Minister's questions.
But I do think that's probably why I'm encouraging other newspaper groups as well to do things like this, things like podcasts, which is a medium that young people are technologically savvy on and they do listen to. And definitely, let's still embrace our social media.
Do you know
and
one of
online.
My favourites that we've ever done of this? Hmm. Is when we had the students from the University of Worcester.
They were fantastic, weren't they? Weren't they brilliant,
that
eloquent,
was brilliant.
Intelligent young people?
But they were, I mean, I'll betray something a little bit. They were as nervous as anything before the microphones went live.
Wow, they turned it on the
but
minute.
Then half an hour, over half an hour, neither of them skipped a beat. They were both just erudite. And I think that's what it is. I think podcasts led by yourself, the drive to do these podcasts, I think we're broadening and saying to people, if you want to get your news this week from the podcast, great, absolutely fine. But if we can unlock it and actually make you go to our website or make you go to our social media, brilliant. And if you do want to have a pick up the paper, do it.
Yeah, we need to cover all options and we are doing so.
But I mean, one of my great loves is cricket, and I remember when the T20 was launched, the 20 over competition, people were like, oh, well, that's not cricket, you know, it's over in 20 overs, how can you have a game that only lasts 40 overs in total? But then you realise young people were flocking to it because it's over quickly, it doesn't take 5 days like a test match. But then it's your opening, you see 2020, you think, wow, I'd really like to bowl that fast, or I'd really like to hit it a long way like that. And then you start going into other games. And I think that's what we do with podcasts. I think if you're listening to this and you've heard a story that we've talked about and you want to read more about it, because we can never tell you the story, because if we were reading a newspaper out, we'd just be a talking newspaper. But if we can open it out to people, then I think that's the future. But we're going to be growing it and we need your support. And I will say this, you know, thanks to Claire, I've discovered a way of tagging you all on Facebook. So if you are mentioned on the podcast, you're going to get a tag on Facebook. So I'd like you to share it. And actually a big shout out to Usain Bolt as well.
Let's tag him.
We tagged him last week on Facebook and Twitter.
Oh, he wrote us a nice comment.
And he wrote a nice comment and he shared it and everyone. And this is great. I look forward to seeing you all on the 15th of September. I thought, that's the benchmark now. So if you're ever on, and if you're a guest, and we've got some guests, I hope, coming in a couple of weeks' time. I really do. We've got, certainly the Help for Heroes guys are very, very supportive. But I'm particularly looking forward to, I'm hoping to have Greenpeace on, the Worcester branch of Greenpeace. Climate change all over the news. And I want to really delve into what the issues are and really talk about the future, because that is massive, I think. And the best thing of being a host at times when you have guests on, you can actually fill your knowledge blanks. I don't know enough about green issues, so hopefully we're going to get the guys from Greenpeace on very soon. Anyway, how are we doing, producer?
Amazing. I've really thoroughly enjoyed this talk.
Should we do some news?
We should do some news. Yeah, what's happened this week in town?
I just want to highlight Nigel Preston. This is going to be on WorcesterObserver.co.uk later on, but it's on the front page of today's paper. Nigel Preston, a brilliant picture. He's doing a sponsored silence over the bank holiday weekend to raise money for Macmillan as part of Macmillan May at the Ye Olde Talbot on Friar Street. You can't miss it. It's a beautiful white pub. They're raising money for Macmillan May. There's a host of events, but we've got a great picture of Nigel on the front. He's doing a sponsored silence, and all the best to him because all the staff there, because they are hosting so many events to raise money for a brilliant cause. Do read about it on observer.co.uk later on today. But if you do get the paper as well, do take a look at the picture on the front, because it's a fantastic picture by Marcus.
What's he doing? So he's not making any noise?
He's going to stop talking for 24 hours, but he's the general manager of a pub.
Oh, that's going to be tough. Who's going to call time?
Well, I think he'll probably have other staff for that, but it's a fantastic thing. That, again, the value of Facebook. That was a message from Emma, who works at the... We're doing all this. Can you get something in? We got a photographer out and it's on the front page of the Observer. That's a 4-day turnaround.
Amazing.
One thing I do want to draw your attention to, because this was embargoed till this morning. Campaigners have urged the government to tackle child poverty because the End Child Poverty Coalition have revealed new research which suggests 30% of children in Worcester are living in poverty.
No.
I think that's absolutely disgusting.
That's appalling.
We estimated 7,177 youngsters in Worcester today are growing up below the breadline when housing costs like mortgages and rent are taken out of the equation. Some of the worst affected areas, 49% of youngsters in Warndon.
Sorry,
49% in Gorse Hill are living below the breadline. 1,000 children in Warndon are living below the breadline. I think that's absolutely disgusting. And it shows that whilst this country is in a state of flux over everything, we're actually ignoring the people that matter, our future. What is another thing?
It looks like a great paper again this
week.
It
feels chunky.
I love it. It really does.
One good thing as well, I actually talked to Councillor Nida Hassan last night as well. The first Muslim woman member of Worcester City Council has been hailed by community leaders across the city. A mention for Mohammed Iqbal, the General Secretary of the Worcester Muslim Welfare Association, who welcomed this. It's fantastic. I've spoken to Nida. I actually spoke to Councillor Nida Hassan last year when she was going for election for the first time. Wonderfully erudite young lady. Fantastic ideas and vision. And I know she'll be a very, very good local councillor. Quick mention for the cathedral as well. They've got £1 million from the Heritage Lottery Fund to become a unique learning, arts and heritage venue. Fantastic for the cathedral. Absolutely terrific for that. And also, if you've been walking down the shambles, if you're listening to this in your ears walking down the shambles, don't look down too much because you might trip over. But if you do want to look down, the pavement, all the paving has been done very, very nicely now and looks an absolute treat.
Oh, that's good to know. And Rob, if somebody does have a story that they feel could make the paper, how do they get in touch with you? And what sort of stories do you look for?
Anything. Anything could be a story. The thing I obsess with, and I'm glad you brought this up because I'm going to get on a hobby horse for just very quickly. Don't think it isn't a story. Because if you're thinking about contacting a newspaper anyway, chances are it's probably a story. Because I don't think the human brain, you know, no one's ever going to contact and say, oh, I had chips for my tea. No one's ever going to do that. But also don't think, if you're a community group, and this goes out to local groups, run by volunteers and or schools, anything that's where people are contacting us in addition to their current job, don't feel you have to write a press release that's wonderful and, you know, very, you know, truncated and small and, you know, oh, I'm only going to write 100 words. Because the chances are journalists like myself and others across the city and beyond, we're probably going to pick up the phone and say, well, I need to know a bit more. Put as much in. But don't feel pressured to write brilliant press releases, because that's our job.
Right.
I keep saying to people, oh, I've got a press release, but it's not very good. It doesn't matter.
Just send it along and
because
you'll do your
thing. Even if you just sent bullet points and said, right, here's what we want to get across, but we can't convey it in the way you guys, that's fine. That's my job. That's my job to write a story from it. You know, I get teachers, two or three times I've had teachers like, oh, we have got a press release, but it's not very good and it's a bit wordy. Mm. That's absolutely fine because I'll get it on my screen. Mm. I'll get the information out that I know they want to convey.
Put it into an article, yeah.
And if you want to get into the first point, I've got 3 email addresses. So if you want to get to under my nose straight away, it's editor@worcesterobserver.co.uk. If you want to message us on Facebook, search for Worcester Observer, add us on Facebook. You'll see so much. You'll see the podcast link on there as well, every week that Claire lovingly puts together, and then I tend to just write a load of gubbins and then tag you all in it. We're on Worcestershire Hour as well. Big shout out, because every time we go on Worcestershire Hour and we put the podcast up, we put the front page up, we put the front page story up, those guys retweet it for us brilliantly. They don't have to do it. It's brilliant, brilliant network. Hi, Stuart. I'm going to tag them. I'll tag them in this week, I think. Twitter, if you're on Twitter, send us a direct message or just at us. We'll get back to you. There's a story I'm working on for next week. I'm not going to tell you too much about it. I'm going to tease you, but we will talk about it on next week's podcast because I know it's going to happen. It's a fantastic story. I'm looking forward to it immensely. But that's a Twitter message. But Instagram, can people contact us on Instagram?
We do. We look at the Instagram messages. We don't get many on Instagram yet. We're still, I think, about 3,000 followers. So yeah, follow us on Instagram. We've only just recently set it up. But definitely...
Send me a letter. You've got the postal address. Or if you want to hear these dulcet tones on the phone, ring me. 01527588688. Ask for me. We're there. We're at council meetings. We're there in the community. But don't, if you think it's got a story, if you think it's a story, chances are it probably will be, and we'll get it in for you. Don't be afraid of coming forward and go, oh, they won't be interested in that, because I want the Observer to represent everybody from 6 to 60 and beyond.
Brilliant.
But I think we'll wrap up there. I just want to say, just because indulging my love of cricket, congratulations, Josh Dell, 20 years old from Tunbury Wells, made his debut for Worcestershire in the current county championship match with Durham, only 20, and he becomes the 516th player to represent Worcestershire as a county. So congratulations, Josh, go well. Remember, watch the ball constantly. Don't get too far ahead of yourself. And, you know, watch the ball.
And come on the podcast. Tell us all about it.
Well, I'm going to...
Maybe.
we've had the guys on, they're all very good talkers, and that's the problem for them now, because I'm now thinking next time we'll get them on again.
Brilliant.
But good luck to Warriors as well, last game of the season against Saracens on, is it Saturday or Sunday? Saturday at 4 o'clock, and all the best to Johnny R as well, who's playing his last game for Worcester Warriors this weekend after, I think, two decades of service. So he started as a 7-year-old in the academy.
Brilliant. Oh, well,
and Johnny,
thank you.
If you're listening... And you've got free time over the summer? Just saying, podcast?
Let's
talk rugby.
We'd love it.
You can educate me about rugby, because shamefully, I still don't know everything I should do. But anyway, we'll move on, because we've been rambling for so long. Thanks, Claire. I think that's been...
I've loved it. I've learned a lot. And thank you so much, Rob, for being so open and honest and doing such an amazing job for us and the city of Worcester.
She's going to make my head swell one day. She really is the amount of... You can't see it now, but I'm blushing now with the amount of praise I'm getting. But let's go for another thing that deserves a lot of praise, and that's Claire's What's on Worcester Roundup.
You're listening to the Worcester Observer podcast because you have impeccable taste.
Thanks, Rob. And I'm back with some fun things happening this week in town. My name is Claire Bullivant at the Worcester and Malvern Observers, and these are my top picks of things to do and see this week in the Worcester and Malvern areas. Starting off this weekend on Friday, the 17th of May, we've got so much going on in town. If you like comedy, you need to catch award-winning stand-up comedian, viral blogger and best-selling author Sam Avery and his Learner Parent Show at Huntington Hall on Friday night. Sam tells us he started his award-winning blog when his twin boys were born. A million nappies, Peppa Pig episodes and a head full of hair loss later, he shares all the lows, the highs and the hilarious in-betweens of his experiences of first-time parenthood. Get your tickets from Worcester Live. It's going to be a great show. Also on Friday night, we've got loads of live music happening all over town. Some great bands performing at Paradiddle's Music Cafe, including Glitch, Lucy and the Bones and the Dylan Marshall Project. Never 42, a brilliant Level 42 tribute band, will be on at the Mars Bar on Friday night. And everyone's favourites, the Wu-Town Hillbillies, will be performing at the Earl Boat. I caught the Wu-Town Hillbillies a couple of weeks ago and they're incredible. Such a good night. You're bound to have amazing fun. And it's a huge night over at the Worcester Arts Workshop on Friday with loads of great local bands, including the Pink Diamond Revue, the Abortum, Rosebud, Deathly Pale Party, Movement DJs, and the list goes on and on. If you haven't checked out some of the Worcester Arts Workshop events yet, you're really missing out. They put on some great shows and the talent is unreal. If you're into your music and you even play music too, get involved with them as well. I couldn't sing their praises highly enough. You'll make some great contacts and it's a great organisation to be associated with. Also, on Friday night, if you're over in Malvern Way, check out the beautiful singer Polly Edwards. She'll be performing at the Colwall Park Hotel. And there's also Canadian folk musician Ian Sherwood performing at Elmsley House in Malvern on Friday too. He's an incredible guitarist, saxophonist, and a huge singer-songwriter who the Canadian Folk Music Awards gave him the prize for Contemporary Singer a few years ago. He's a big deal over there. He's a born storyteller and a constant creator. His music dances the line between folk and pop, and it's going to be a spectacular show. Get all the details at elmsleyhouse.co.uk. And Elmsley is E-L-M-S-L-I-E, house.co.uk. And if you're after some theatre action on Friday night, get on over to the Swan Theatre in Worcester for Those Were the Days. This is a show with music, comedy, and the feel-good factor. This is three award-winning artists in a fast-moving variety roller coaster as they take you on a journey through the 50s, 60s, and the pick of the music up until the modern day. It's comedian Lee Carroll from the stand-up show on BBC One, and he recalls his early life. And it's also the Variety Club award-winning vocalist Lynn Sweet singing the songs from Dusty and Cilla and Lulu and Petula Clark, etc. And it's all about Buddy when leading tribute star Paul Birch takes the stage with all the hits from the legendary Buddy Holly show, if you've ever seen that. It's foot-tapping, sing-along entertainment and laugh-out-loud comedy. It's a great show. Get your tickets quick from Worcester Live. Moving on to Saturday, the 18th of May, a classical feast is going down with the Worcestershire Symphony Orchestra at St Martin's Church on the London Road on Saturday. If you want tickets for that, 01905 358083. And we've also got some red wine going down with UB40 Experience, a fabulous UB40 tribute performing at the Mars Bar on Saturday night. And it doesn't stop there. The Fireballs UK will be on at the Chestnut in Worcester on Saturday. Witcher will be performing a show at the Oak Apple in Worcester on Saturday. Chief O'Neill is doing his thing at the Green Dragon in Malvern. And there's also a Blues Brothers show at the Cross Keys in Malvern too. Sunday the 19th of May also sees some great performers out and about. Ben Vickers will be on at the Chestnut in Worcester early evening there from about 5:30 p.m. Will Killeen will be performing at the Imperial Tavern in Worcester from about 5 p.m. And The Orb is putting on a show at the Mars Bar on Sunday. And if you don't know who The Orb are, they are one of the most pioneering acts in dance music history. And this is part two of their 30th anniversary On the Road tour. Part one of their tour completely sold out straight away, so now's your chance to throw back to the 90s at the Mars Bar. The Orb are very much at the top of their game 30 years on, and who doesn't love a little bit of 90s revival? Get yourself there on Sunday night. But if you want to go even further back, the Harcourt Players are and have original music to silent movies happening at Elmsley House in Malvern on Sunday evening too. The Harcourt Players are Simon Othen and Luke Wormley, and together they write musical scores for classical silent movies from the early 1900s. For their return to Elmsley, they're bringing with them Laurel and Hardy in Sailor's Beware, which will be sandwiched in between two Buster Keaton romps. But the audience focuses on the films. The Harcourt Players weave their way through these hilarious classics, highlighting the ups and downs, chases and falling in love scenes, using an array of their instruments such as guitar, banjo, mandolin, ukulele, harmonicas and a variety of percussion. So come and enjoy it on Sunday evening, and two of the silent movie era's greatest hits will be playing, and you'll be laughing your socks off. Banana peels won't be included, so do bring your own if you need those. Find out all the details on elmsleyhouse.co.uk. And that concludes our roundup of events to see and do this week in town. If you have an event that you'd like included, please do get in touch with us. You can email your event details to us. I'll give us a call on the phone and we'll publicise it to all the readers of our paper. We'll also pop you on social media and you'll also be on this podcast. Thanks so much for listening and have a great week.